The new year ushers in new opportunities and new challenges for Wisconsin lawmakers. Let's break it all down in the State Capitol Report. Joining us now is John Nygren, a Republican state representative from Marinette and co-chair of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. He also co-chairs the governor's task force on opioid abuse. Representative Nygren, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Well, let's begin with opioids, an issue that's, of course, of personal importance to you. Why are you glad Governor Walker called for this special legislative session on this?
Well, there's a number of reasons I'm excited about the special session, but I can tell you the last 4 years, the efforts we've had in Wisconsin, probably the biggest success is that just people are more aware. The awareness on the potential addictive nature of prescription drugs that many of us get on a regular basis has people having conversations with their doctors that they haven't had before, and I think that's probably one of the most positive things from the governor's focus on this issue. But in addition to that, some of the things that we're providing will be vital resources as we try and battle addiction and get more people, which meets one of the governor's objectives, more people back into the workforce.
Well, why do this as a special session instead of taking up these various proposals in regular session?
And that's a reasonable question, and they could be done in a regular session, but the fact that we are calling a special session on this shows the importance of this issue and the commitment that the governor and the legislature have to working towards reforms that are going to be tools in this battle. So I think it really helps that awareness issue.
Well, these measures were based on recommendations from the governor's task force on opioid abuse, which you co-chaired. It's a pretty long list of proposals. Does this suggest we're way behind on dealing with this problem, or is the state on top of this and trying to get ahead of the opioid issue? What about this long list?
Actually, I think one of the things, reading the report, the staff put together some data and some press stories from some other areas, and there was actually a quote in here that kind of caught me by surprise because I hadn't heard it before, but it's from the director of Hazleton in Minnesota. A reporter was asking if what Wisconsin could learn from Minnesota, and the quote from the director was that it's not what Minnesota could learn from Wisconsin, or it's not what Wisconsin could learn from Minnesota, it's what Minnesota and the rest of the country could learn from Wisconsin. We don't look at this as trying to be on the cutting edge, being leaders per se. We're just trying to affect the issue. But if in the meantime we become one of the national leaders on opioid abuse and reform from a government standpoint, then that's great. And the good news is that's where we're at.
Well, let's break down a few of these proposals. One bill would grant legal immunity for people who overdose. What's the thinking behind this?
So when we passed the 911 Good Samaritan law, a number of states, when we passed ours, we were the 17th state to have such a thing. In other words, people were ending up left alone to die, basically, because nobody was calling 911 a fear of prosecution. We provided immunity for the person dialing 911, but we did not provide immunity for the person overdosing. That was a personal choice I made based on the communications I've had with parents, based on my own personal experience with my daughter with an addiction, is that oftentimes they have to hit rock bottom before they actually get the help that they need. And just because they were safe from this overdose doesn't mean that tomorrow they couldn't go out and overdose again. So oftentimes getting them into corrections was actually a positive step for a lot of people in active use. Now, the addiction community has asked us to look at this because they still were getting people who were not calling because they make a pact and say, don't call for me, I don't want to go to jail. So what we did is we looked for options. And we do have an option that's teamed with the immunity for the person who is overdosing. It provides for a potential for emergency detention, which is very similar to, basically identical to what we have for alcohol already, meaning if you're potentially a danger to yourself, your loved ones, could you have you held for up to 72 hours to take you out of that active situation where you could do harm to yourself. So that is kind of the compromise that we came up, and I think it's a good move.
And there's also $126,000 over 2 years that would go toward training programs at rural hospitals. How big a problem is opioid abuse away from urban areas?
Well, if you look at the statistics, it's not really any part of the state or any part of the nation, for that matter, is really immune to this problem. And the bigger challenge is in rural areas, you really don't have the access to the treatment and the resources that more urban areas do. So, yeah, this is getting the resources to the rural areas continue to be one of our biggest challenges.
Another one, the task force report recommends letting the University of Wisconsin create a charter recovery school for high school students struggling with addiction. How would this work?
So one of the barriers to treatment, especially if you have a teenager in active addiction, is getting them into treatment. And one of those barriers is taking them out of school. So this would provide an opportunity for a person to be able to continue their education and get the treatment that they need. We do already have, it's important to know, we do have a, treatment schools are not new. We actually have one in Wisconsin. It's a private school in the Madison area. What this would allow is for someone to come in to bid on a charter with our charter, our public, publicly funded schools. They're basically public schools, and they have the access to the state resources. So this could be funded through the per pupil, just like our public schools are, as well as Medicaid if the person's impoverished, or private insurance as a way to fund it. So this would allow people to come in and bid on this opportunity to provide that education and that treatment.
We're taking a look at the pressing issues inside the state capitol with our guest, State Representative John Nygren from Marinette. He co-chairs the legislature's Joint Finance Committee and the governor's task force on opioid abuse. We'd like to hear from you. How do you feel that the legislature should address opioids or heroin? Have you or a loved one struggled with drug abuse? What help do you think the state needs to provide to counter this kind of drug abuse? 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Representative, there's a lengthy list of recommendations, from the governor's task force on opioid abuse. And wondering, are there ones that jump out at you, ones you are particularly supportive of?
Well, being the co-chair, actually it's important to point out that this is a preliminary recommendation from the co-chairs of the task force work. It is not a final report. The task force still has a lot of work to be done, and we will continue to do that over the coming months. But I think probably just continuing to provide access to treatment, that is the most important thing, is to be able to help people get out of the cycle of addiction. I think that the commitment to continue to do that in Wisconsin is the thing I'm the most proud of. So that I think will continue to be our effort to also reduce barriers. One of the requests is to get the Department of the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance to do a survey of all insurance carriers in Wisconsin to be able to completely understand what they cover when it comes to treatment, because that's we're hearing anecdotal situations from parents where they can't, even when they have insurance, they can't get the treatment for the loved one that they need. And we first need to understand what they're providing before we can talk about possible changes.
And we've talked before with you about your daughter's battle with opioids. It's been widely reported by other media outlets. How is she doing today, may we ask?
Sure. That's always a very tough question, because while she might be doing well today, when you are an addict, even if you're in recovery, you're never completely recovered. So today may be good, but tomorrow is going to be another challenge. And that's, if we can do anything in this effort, trying to make people aware of the danger of just taking that pill the first time potentially provides a pathway to addiction. That is our biggest accomplishment, is that awareness. So Cassie's doing good today, but it's a lifelong battle.
And what have you been, how has legislation informed you by having this as a personal struggle?
Well, I mean, I've been able to rely on some of my personal experiences. The 911 Good Samaritan law was based on an experience with Cassie overdosing. So the experience with corrections has been, the things we've done have been based on personal experiences. The people that I've met throughout the state who have had similar issues in their family, or drug treatment experts, all these things have helped me form the different pieces of legislation that we've put forward over the last 4 years, and will continue to do so.
Let's jump in here with a caller, Mary from Lancaster. Hi, Mary.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, why wasn't this a priority in the past before you personally became involved in it, and why isn't there the same for people that are alcohol addiction?
Really quickly, about 30 seconds here, how would you respond to that?
Well, first and foremost, pretty much all these different reforms work with any form of addiction, whether it be alcohol-related or drug-related. The treatment still will be available. Doesn't, you know, this may be the focus at this point in time, but the resources will still be there, so regardless of the addiction. Why wasn't this a priority before? Well, first of all, you don't know what you don't know as an individual. My experience gave me, you know, things happen. I'm a believer, you know, in higher power. Things happen for a reason. This addiction came into my family because I had the ability to make a difference. I'm not going to ever apologize for using my experiences in life.
And I'm going to have to jump in there, Representative John Nygren. We're hearing from you right now. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy. We'll be right back after this news from NPR. Stay with us. You're listening to the State Capitol Report on the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy. State Representative John Nygren stays with us. He's a Republican from Marinette, co-chairs both the legislature's Joint Finance Committee as well as the governor's task force on opioid abuse. Governor Scott Walker will deliver his State of the State tomorrow, and we'd like your input on what he should say about the state at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Right now, we're going to full phones and talking a bit about the opioid crisis. Bill from Waukesha. Hi, Bill.
Hey, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
And what would you like to say?
Well, John, thanks for your work and your leadership in this area, and thank the both of you for the great show. And my interest is that I'm a family doctor working in a narcotics addiction clinic in Oak Creek. And we do not take insurance. We take cash only. Insurance can help with the drugs. Insurance can help with the counseling. But the visits with the doctor are fairly expensive, and they don't take insurance. And that is an obstacle for a lot of our clients because they have to be in treatment for several years. I'm wondering if the governor's bill or his recommendations for money for clinics could somehow be turned into grants for the ones that we as the providers feel are needy and could really use that boost or a discount or a subsidy to help them with their office payments. What do you think of that?
Representative Nygren, how do you feel about this?
Well, I mean, there's always options to make amendments to change legislation, but that's not the proposal as it currently sits right now. I think the long term, as I discussed earlier in the show, the long term barrier to insurance is something that's on the radar screen. That's why we've asked for that survey of all the insurers so we can truly understand what they are covering, because one will say they cover it, the other will say they don't. And, you know, if you're a parent, this is the ultimate in, you know, confusion when you're trying to find treatment for your loved one. So we've had conversations with insurers. There's a number of them that are willing to step up. But first we need to understand what they do cover so that we can make changes. I'm a conservative. I don't believe necessarily in more laws per se, but what I believe in is finding best practices that we know by working with the medical community and the insurers to use what we know works and then make sure that the insurance is covering it.
Now let's go to Chuck from La Crosse. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to add?
I'm an obstetrician who takes care of women with addiction here in La Crosse. And one of our biggest problems for our pregnant women who are on opioid replacement therapy and also on other drugs is housing instability. Our patients live chaotic lives, and it makes it difficult for them to get to their treatment sessions and appointments when they have poor transportation. But a bigger issue is, where am I staying tonight? And patients do a lot of couch surfing. It would really be helpful to me as a professional taking care of these patients if we had some options for housing. Is there any chance of adding money into the laws that would help us with providing secure housing for our patients?
Well, that was we actually did one of the governor's task force meetings was held in La Crosse right before Christmas. And that came through loud and clear. That's really the first place that we heard it as a priority, but it's not a big surprise. I mean, stable housing is definitely a challenge, whether it be sober, long-term sober living to support people in recovery. It is not part of the call from the special session, but as a reminder, I made the comment earlier, the task force is not done, and I think housing will continue to be on the radar screen to make changes to provide some supports.
Chuck, thanks so much for your call. Moving on, Governor Scott Walker will give his annual State of the State address tomorrow afternoon. Representative Nygren, what are you hoping to hear him say?
Well, specifically about this issue, you know, I think he's done a good job connecting. You know, his priority has always been jobs and workforce. So he's done a good job explaining to people. This is an untapped resource of people. Oftentimes, people are very judgmental of people that have an addiction, so they are very critical towards some of our reforms. But if you realize that this is already an expense to the state of Wisconsin, they're already spending resources, whether it be medical or whether it be the corrections dollars that we're spending in this population. If we can target our resources to be able to help them break the cycle of addiction, they can be productive taxpaying citizens, holding a job, supporting a family, rather than draining our social programs. So that is one thing I want to hear from the governor, is continued support for this issue. But then other challenges that we face as a state, our transportation funding, continue to be at, you know, top of the list from my perspective.
And not too much further down the road, Governor Walker will unveil his budget plans, and then you and the rest of the Joint Finance Committee will keep busy taking up the various proposals, making changes, and voting on them. The area getting the most attention, like you mentioned, is transportation. How do you want the state to attack this proposed $1 billion shortfall?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, a lot of my colleagues, and I'm with them. There is a report coming from our nonpartisan audit bureau that will look for potential reforms, cost-saving measures that we can implement to be able to make sure that the taxpayer dollars are used the most appropriately. So that's very important. But from there, we do have a long-term funding challenge that we face. So do we need to prioritize projects? I'm willing to sit down and prioritize what projects make the most sense from an economic standpoint that are going to deliver the most jobs, going to deliver the most growth. You know, so that needs to be targeted. But I do believe that looking at where we could collect our revenues from has to be part of this equation, because gas tax, as cars become more fuel efficient, gas tax has been what we've been relying on. But as cars become more fuel efficient, that has been a declining revenue source compared to the growth of the cost. So revenues, how we're going to fund in the future, need to be a part of this conversation.
And Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said last week that toll roads need to be considered. Assuming the state gets the federal nod to go ahead with them, should tolls be part of the long-term funding equation?
I think it should be part of the conversation, yes. I mean, that's been our perspective in the Assembly, that all things should be considered, whether it be prioritizing projects, whether it be reforms, or whether it be revenues. All things should be considered and reviewed, and have a conversation with the people of the state of Wisconsin. So, yes, tolls, which would require federal approval. 28 states have them. It's a true user fee. So people, whether they're Wisconsin citizens or people coming in from Illinois, Minnesota, Michigan that utilize the interstates, would also help support them. So, and you can also use other routes if you choose not to pay the toll. So that's a true user fee rather than relying on registration fee, which doesn't affect how much do you drive, or even a gas tax, which is a declining revenue source, as we talked about. You know, those things are somewhat limited. So I'm supportive of the effort to have that conversation.
And Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said last week that he's open to legalizing medical marijuana in the state. How do you feel about that?
I think he was actually, I've had a conversation with Robin, he was specifically talking about a narrow exemption for cannabinoid oil, which we actually passed a proposal in the Assembly last year. The Senate did not, which is an oil that can be used for treatment for people that have severe, they have... I'm not even sure. So basically, like when they have
seizures.
Uh-huh. Thank you. So that is, I think, what he was specifically talking about. Medical marijuana, you know, I'm sympathetic. to the people, anybody that's in pain. But we have to be very careful, as I've had conversations with the addiction community, people that are experts on this issue almost unanimously don't believe that, you know, we ever want to get to a point of full legalization. And if we do go down the road of medical marijuana, we have to be very careful on how we craft that law in our state.
And really quickly, last question here. Republicans hold majorities in both houses that they haven't enjoyed in decades. With that in mind, what's your hope for how this budget process ultimately pans out?
You know, the one of the great things about our about legislatures, regardless of who's in charge, regardless of who's got the majorities, people represent the areas they come from. So it's not always a Republican or a Democrat issue. It's often based on your perspective is based on the part of the state you come from, the challenges that you face. So the conversations will be very much open. With our members and with the people of the state of Wisconsin, we need to have that dialogue to prioritize what's important to the people. And the process that we use, having public hearings throughout the state, I encourage people to come out on out and express their views, because that's an important part of our decision making.
Representative Nygren, thanks so much for taking time with us today.
It's good to be with you. Have a great day.
You too. John Nygren is a Republican state representative from Marinette, co-chair of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. He also co-chairs the governor's task force on opioid abuse. Capital Report continues here on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy. We're now welcoming the other side of the aisle with Democratic State Representative Diane Hesselbein. She's from Middleton and the Assembly Assistant Minority Leader. Representative Hesselbein, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we've just been talking about budget and policy matters with Representative John Nygren. So, you know, keeping along that vein, tomorrow afternoon, Governor Walker will give his annual State of the State address. What are you hoping to hear from that?
I'm hoping to hear that the governor is going to lay out a plan for working families and middle-class families, getting people to work with a good wage that they can support their families. I'm hoping to hear something like that.
How would you describe the state of the state?
You know, I'm going to be interested to see what Governor Walker has to say. I think, you know, we have a lot of work to do. We are, you know, we have a transportation crisis. And you mentioned you spoke with Representative Nygren on that. Looking forward to seeing what they want to do to help that crisis. We do some good work, though. I'm interested in looking at all the opioid bills they just put out last week, hoping we can get those done soon.
What would you consider to be the biggest problem right now facing Wisconsin?
Boy, there's a lot of problems facing Wisconsin right now. It's so hard to narrow it down. I would say the roads, the transportation, and then jobs. We really need to get people in good jobs. People say that there's a, you know, they have jobs to offer, but sometimes they're not family sustaining jobs, or they're, you know, minimum wage jobs, and people can't support themselves or a family on $8 or even, you know, $8.50 an hour. It's really tough, and people are getting more than one job. And I guess what I always look for is people should be able to do a full-time job and get paid well so that they can put food on the table.
And you mentioned transportation. The Transportation Fund faces a projected $1 billion shortfall. Republicans are split on how to proceed, with some backing an all options on the table approach. And others, including Governor Walker, say they oppose a hike in the gas tax and fees unless there are equal cuts elsewhere in the budget. Where do you stand?
Well, the Republicans have had 6 years to fix this problem. 6 years they've controlled the governor's, all three branches, the governor's office, the Senate, and the Assembly, and they can't come to a decision. So I'm hoping that this time that we can actually come to a conclusion and they can work with us. My door is always open to talk about these issues, to try to move Wisconsin forward. Because, you know, my father used to say years ago, inaction is action, and this is it. They haven't acted on anything, and so we find ourselves at this critical point.
And we've heard a ripple about a place for toll roads on Wisconsin highways. How do you feel about the prospect of perhaps toll roads?
Yeah, if they had thought of this 6 years ago and were really interested in toll roads and going after that, getting federal approval, I could see where, you know, we'd be at a point now that they'd be built and maybe we'd be getting some revenue by it. But it's a long-term approach. We'd have to get federal approval. Where is it going to be built? There are a lot more questions that I have about a possible toll road.
And given the split within the majority GOP, how important do you think the minority Democrats' role may be on this transportation issue?
Well, I think it's critical. I think, you know, we've been talking about, the Democrats have been talking about this transportation issue for years. And, you know, to be fair, the Republicans have too, but they just haven't acted on it. So I'm hopeful this time that they'll actually, you know, come talk with us and maybe come up with a plan so that our roads can be improved on. Because it's important for the economy and for tourism and for the safety and well-being of our citizens of the state.
Well, we heard from Ed here on Facebook who's saying by ignoring transportation infrastructure needs, cutting funds to education at public institutions, and losing higher paying jobs to other states and countries, Wisconsin has been digging an enormous pit that will still be there years after voters get rid of the current legislation, he said, current GOP. Walker keeps saying, quote, our future is so bright we have to wear shades, not understanding that he's blind to our basic needs. What would you say to Ed on Facebook?
I could, you know, say to Ed that I certainly understand where he's coming from. Just because you wear shades and you say your future is so bright doesn't mean that it's the truth. There are a lot of people all over the state that are really struggling. And it's, you know, they're just, they don't know where they're going to get their money from. And I think that's one thing that this last election in November really showed to people in Wisconsin is that people are hurting. And sometimes you don't know who to blame, who did it. You just know that you want to change. And the system, I think, in the state of Wisconsin is really rigged. And I think that's what they were responding to in this last election. Is that it's rigged, and we're giving a lot of tax breaks to the very wealthy people in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and talk a little bit more about what you mean by it is rigged.
Well, we currently have a manufacturing and agricultural tax credit, and it's large. And it was put in the budget in 2011, I think it was the last day, by then-Senator Glenn Grossman. And it's ballooned every single year since. And right now it stands that there are 11 people in the state of Wisconsin that get a $20 million tax break because they fall under this umbrella with this agricultural and manufacturing tax credit. That's $20 million to 11 people. If you think what we could do to infuse that into Wisconsin, what we could do for working families, maybe a child care tax credit, maybe help the university system, maybe a middle class tax cut. That's where I would be really excited if we could start talking and doing things for middle-class working families. That would be fantastic. But instead, to be clear, the Republicans are giving $20 million to 11 people in the state of Wisconsin as a tax break every year.
We're talking with Diane Hesselbein, who is a Democratic state representative from Middleton and the Assembly Assistant Minority Leader. It is the State Capitol Report. We want to hear from you. What would be your agenda for the legislature as it gets underway? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Send us an email at talk@WPR.org. You can tweet us at the Joy Cardine Show. What are your priorities? Is it opioid or heroin legislation? Is it something else? We would love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. We also have Carol on Facebook who says, how about also dealing with the gun violence issue? Universal background checks, increasing consequences, approving the mental health funding asked for by DPI. What would you say about that?
Well, definitely gun violence is extremely important, and I support background checks. I think it's important, especially when we've seen what's happened all over the United States. I just think that it makes sense. And, you know, to be honest, I'm on Natural Resources and Sporting Heritage Committee, and I support hunters and fishermen and everything like that. I think it's fantastic, but I do think there need to be checks and balances.
We're talking with Representative Diane Hesselbein, who is a Democratic state representative from Middleton and the Assembly Assistant Minority Leader. You're listening to the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network. We'd love to hear from you. 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. News is next. You're listening to the Ideas Network. 103rd Wisconsin State Assembly is in full swing, and Governor Walker delivers his State of the State address tomorrow. WPR will carry a speech at 3. Staying with us to discuss the work inside the state capitol is Democratic Representative Diane Hesselbein from Middleton. She's the Assembly Assistant Minority Leader. We heard from Republican Representative John Nygren earlier in the program. Now let's hear from you. How would you craft the state budget? Tell us how you would prioritize funding or make cuts at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's head to the phones with Steve from Stoughton. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for the discussion. I think school districts for the last 6 years have been struggling to try to make things work given the budget cuts that started in 2010, and I think that school funding is an important priority for this administration.
What would you say to that, Representative?
I agree 100%, Steve. And I used to be on a school board for the Middleton Cross Plains Area School District, and I know that we've had some tough decisions to make on Middleton, and definitely our schools are struggling all across the state. Stoughton's doing well, Sun Prairie's doing well, you know, a lot of places in Dane County, but they still have to make decisions on teachers, and we're having some teacher shortages, and now it's really difficult. Unless people are getting into the field of teaching. And so we're going to be having a shortage of teachers in a few years, and I'm really worried about what that's going to look like as well.
And so what would you propose, Steve, to tackle this? Is it just throwing money at it, or is there something else?
Well, actually, I'm running for the school board, so that's a really good question.
Glad that you're running. It's important.
Yeah, it is important. And so there's some things that I think school districts could dig a little deeper and look for stronger partnerships outside of maybe the norm. I have some ideas. But in the end, the state, I think, has a responsibility to increase the budget, just even, you know, $50 to $100. But this per student, the school district, there's so much uncertainty, and you just don't know what's going to happen year to year, or at least biennial budget. So it's really a super challenge for the district to just have so much uncertainty. So a little more financial certainty, maybe lifting some of the referendum requirements that, you know, would impose restrictions on what districts can do with referendum. There's a number of solutions potential.
Those are interesting thoughts. And I just want to say that, you know, you posed the question of throw money at it. And I've never thought of throwing money as the same thing as investing in our children and our schools, you know, our vulnerable population, to educate them, because they are, of course, not just the future, they are the present, but they are also the workforce of the future. So I think investing in these students is something very critical in our budget that we need to do more of.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Ron in Independence. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
What would you
Ron.
To add?
I am adding that it's about our road problems. Our infrastructure is already there. Why don't we just add a nickel or a dime to our gas tax? I understand our cars are more efficient and everything, but the infrastructure is there. Why build all the toll booths and all this other, mm-hmm. we're going to have to man them and everything. We already have, you know, the gas tax is coming in. Just raise it. We cut off the indexing, 8 years ago.
Yes.
And you could see we were going to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
How would you respond to that, Representative?
I would say definitely that's what people have been, you know, talking about as well. They've been saying if it's already there, why not do it? The problem is that Governor Walker has driven, you know, this line in the sand saying he doesn't want to do this unless he can cut something else out of the budget. And I don't think there's anything else to cut. He's been cutting for years. So I think that's where the problem lies. I think we have to really try to figure out if he's willing to move at all on this issue. I don't think he is.
Well, Ron, thank you so much for your call this morning. Andy on Facebook says, I would love Wisconsin to do something about money in politics. Currently,
yes.
He says, only people who can afford huge donations receive representation. He says the 11 people who received the giant tax cuts are a perfect example. Donations are a tax on representation. It's also why we can't fix other problems, like he said, education, transportation, and job creation. How would you respond to Andy?
I would agree that we have too much money in politics. That's the system we're in now, unfortunately. I would like to do, oh my gosh, so much if we could. I would like to do fair redistricting. I would like to see all these districts in the state of Wisconsin be pretty competitive. And that way you're really working for the people and not for, you know, other things that people might say you're working for. I just think we need a complete overhaul of our campaign finance system. I believe it should be publicly funded, and there should be a cap on that as well. I don't think it should be, you know, much money at all. People should be running on their ideas, not on money in the bank.
We're talking with Democratic Representative Diane Hesselbein from Middleton on the State Capitol Report. Representative, turning to another issue, the opioid abuse. Governor Walker calling a special legislative session to curb heroin and opioid abuse. He asked lawmakers to take up a package of bills that were based on recommendations from his task force. Is this an area where Republicans and Democrats can work together?
I think it really is. I just started looking at the bills. It seems like a good start. The task force just started in September, and they've only met a few times. But my good friend Representative Jill Billings is on that task force, and I talked with her about what she was, you know, seeing in the bills, and she thought that it was all stuff that they've heard and could really help people and was in the right track. So I think this is definitely something that Democrats and Republicans both care about and see common solutions. The other thing I would say, we do some common work in our task force. I was on a task force last session on Alzheimer's dementia, and we came up with 10 bipartisan bills. They passed the assembly unanimously. They did not all make it to the governor's desk. The Senate, I think, only passed 3 of them. But I think on those big issues like that, there's some common ground. And anytime you can travel the state of Wisconsin with your colleagues and listen to the people in Wisconsin, it tends to be a very good thing.
And so how do you feel about designating a special session to deal with this issue instead of just dealing with it in regular session?
This is not an abnormal practice. I think we have to get this done because I think this whole thing started because Senator Tammy Baldwin wrote a letter saying there were federal funds that we could go after. And all this stuff has to be done during the budget time. It's just a quick turnaround. So I think that's why it seems to be going a little quicker than usual. And having a special session to take care of it makes sense to me.
Well, let's take another caller now who has more to add about the agenda. Richard from Milwaukee. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you doing? I was just calling to say that I think that, you know, one of the big issues should be, you know, the black male incarceration rate, the black male unemployment that has been leading the nation for years and years in a catastrophic numbers, you know, but, you know, nothing has really been done to that. And I'd like to see more people on these commissions and these committees that look like and come from the areas that are experienced this. Second, the opiate issue. My heart goes up to that legislator or that whoever he was, senator's daughter. I understand that. But the same thing is that before, when a crack and cocaine addiction hit this country and hit this state, there was nothing. There was more criminalization of everything. But suddenly when the problem fuels into the suburban areas and suburban kids, then special things become available to them. We have to have special legislations and all these things to combat it. Not saying we shouldn't, but it just seems that when suburban kids become affected by certain things, then action is taken. And Milwaukee, once again, is the forgotten city. I mean, you know, there's more than just one thing. You know, you have a thing where the drunk driving, they pass some new laws for that. But you can lose your license faster for not paying a fine or ticket than you can for your drunk driving.
Well, let's jump in here. Representative Hesselbein, how would you respond to Richard's?
Well, Richard, I would say that you have some great representation from Milwaukee who brings up this issue often. Certainly, my good friends, Representative Goyke, Reamer, of course, before that, Representative Barnes would talk about this very issue, and I know Crowley will be talking about this as well, especially about the incarceration rate. I mean, it's just terrible what we're doing to our young people, and so I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to offer. Again, the Democrats always put up a package of bills about criminal justice, and it usually does deal with this very same issue that is hurting so many people in the state of Wisconsin. So I really thank you for bringing it up. And I promise you that there are people working on this as we speak.
Well, Richard, thanks for your call. Let's try to get another call in here. Linda from Pewaukee. Hi, Linda. What is the issue you want to address?
Hi. I'd like to see them address the funding of the DNR. There was an excellent article in Wisconsin State Journal talking about how, in fact, hunting, and trapping and those types of activities, consumptive wildlife activities, are really not as popular as they were, and that seems to be a trend. So if we could make Wisconsin a place where people come to enjoy the outdoors and wildlife in another way, there's a huge untapped resource there. So rather than trying to incentivize and in fact recruit hunters and trappers, as Mr. Clayfish and Mr. Tiffany suggest, why not get with the times and switch over to a different kind of model and funding for the DNR? Thank you.
Oh, that's an interesting point. So, so I am not a hunter or a trapper, but I do support hunters and trappers in the state of Wisconsin. We also have a deer population issue that, of course, the hunters help with. We do a lot of things in the state, though, as far as enjoying our natural resources and hiking and biking and things like that. So I support all those things. I don't think it has to be one or the other. I really think you need a healthy mix of people that enjoy our natural outdoors. And really, that's what it's all about. It's both. It's everyone together really looking at the beauty of Wisconsin. And certainly that's good for tourism. It's good for the DNR. And it's good for you as well, just to get out there and enjoy our natural parks.
Well, last question here. Republicans hold majorities, both houses, and they haven't enjoyed in decades. With that in mind, do you see a cooperative atmosphere at the Capitol?
Right now, we started out in that vein. Speaker Voss had a very nice start to our inaugural session, so that was nice to hear that he really was hoping to pass some Democrat bills and to listen to our ideas. So I'm really hoping that that continues this session. Certainly, we have a lot of great ideas we'd like to see on the table and made law. So I'm hopeful that we can do that and that he's open to that.
Representative Hesselbein, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Diane Hesselbein is a Democratic state representative from Middleton and the Assembly Assistant Minority Leader. Thanks to producers Bill Martins and Brianne Chasso. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy. You hear the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network. Stick around.